We'll go ahead and get going. Hopefully, our last board member will come in just a second. Welcome to the City of Knoxville Board of Zoning Appeals. I'm Daniel Fogel, Chair of the BZA, and I'll be conducting today's meeting. Alongside of me are the other members of the BZA, and here to my left are our city staff members. Today's meeting will be conducted in the order of the agenda, and agendas are available. Usually, they're at the table in the rear of the room. I think they're at the table outside our room here today. Pursuant to the BZA administrative rules, each matter on the agenda will be considered in the following order: staff comments, proponents, opponents, rebuttals, discussion among board members, a motion, and then a second, further discussion among board members, and then finally a vote. Members of the public may address the board, and the following rules will apply. Each person may speak once for 5 minutes and shall not have more than one time to speak, except that the chair may allow an additional 2 minutes to the applicant for rebuttal. The more than one person wants to speak to an issue, each side is limited to 3 speakers with 5 minutes each. The board may ask questions of any speaker and may allow more time or more speakers by a vote. Speakers should limit their remarks to the facts of the case and should avoid repeating comments that have been previously presented to the board. All speakers should come to the podium and speak directly into the microphone. Speakers need to state their name and address for the record. And then finally, appeals of decisions by BZA are made to Knoxville City Council. A petition for such an appeal shall be filed with the Plans Review and Building Inspections Department not more than 15 days from the date of BZA's decision. I will now ask Ms. Scobie to call the roll.
Christina Bowler.
Here.
Daniel Odle.
Here.
Grant Rosenberg.
Here.
Amy Sherrill.
Here.
Ebony James.
Here. Right on time. Perfect. All right. Get us going today to start with. We need to ask for an approval. If there's a motion to approve last month's agenda and meeting records.
Motion to approve minutes. Second.
Second to approve next last month meeting minutes. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. So that carries. Move on to the agenda for the rest of the day. First up is old business from last month, which is agenda item 9G22EA for Blunt Avenue, 451 Blunt Avenue, Janice. Tusher, I think it was in. Is that right? I apologize. And we were here last month, but if you want to go ahead again, and well, first of all, name and address for the record.
Janice Tinker, 326 Taylor Road in South Knoxville.
Thank you very much. But go ahead and start us off again this month.
Great. For the record, I want to say we're not changing the character or intent of our appeal of the administrative decision with regards to the property at 451 West Blount Avenue. We let our narratives from last month speak to the reasons behind our appeal. So we're going to have my speaker and one other. We have issues with the rewrite of page 2, the updated summary and staff comment for this appeal. First, the property address has been disassociated with the summary. This was discussed last month, but our appeal does not disassociate the address. Our appeal is specifically for the administrative decision on this particular property. It's not a general appeal of the process. However, we trust that the process will be reviewed and any ambiguity resolved in the very near future before other development plans that deviate substantially from the South Waterfront Vision Plan are presented. Second, staff claims the applicant asserts a level 3 review is required for a proposed project requiring 6 or more variations. This completely misstates our appeal. Our appeal does not state any number of variances required to be considered a level 3 review. It does state that due to the substantial deviations required for this project that would not otherwise be allowed under a strict interpretation of the 4 district regulations, should have been given a level 3 alternative compliance review. Again, this was discussed at this meeting last month with staff suggesting a number of variances to determine the level of review. And I have rejected that idea if you would listen to the meeting minutes from last month. We have discussed my concerns about page 2, with David Brace, but in review of the online agenda package this morning, nothing has changed. I want to reiterate, we are not opposed to this development. We wanted to go through the appropriate review process with regards to adhering to the South Waterfront Vision Plan. In addition, we do not want the approval of such substantial deviations to set a precedent for future development. The community came together to develop the vision plan for the South Waterfront, including the administrative review process. If there are ambiguities, then this appeal is an excellent motivation in resolving them. In closing, I request you uphold this appeal. We do have one other speaker, Rachel Craig, who is not able to come. She is ill. I did sign up Debbie Mallard to read a statement on her behalf, if that's okay.
Sure, I'm good.
Okay, thank you.
Want my name also?
Yes, ma'am.
Deborah Mallard, 445 West Blunt Avenue, Knoxville, 37920. I'm reading as a proxy of sort for Rachel Craig, 2222 Island Home Boulevard. She says, I've been involved with this code for 16 years. I served on the oversight committee that worked with city administration to develop the code. As a member of the oversight committee, I supported the review process as laid out in the code. We wanted to provide incentives for development on the South Waterfront. One of those incentives was to give proposals which met the code expedited review. Such proposals could be approved by city staff and would not have to go through the planning commission. But the community would also be protected in that proposals not meeting a strict interpretation of the regulations would have a level three review, getting closer scrutiny, both from the profession, planning staff, and from the public. In all those 16 years, nobody ever mentioned to me that a level three review is only for proposals with prohibited uses. Not even during the last 4 years when I've repeatedly raised questions and concerns about how the city reviews South Waterfront projects, both to city staff and to my council representatives. Both our current council member and one preceding him have also raised these questions and issues with city staff. Nobody ever mentioned to them the interpretation of level three that is now being put forth by city staff. The first time I ever heard this interpretation was at the VCA meeting last month. There are only a handful of prohibited uses in the South Waterfront. It is, after all, supposed to be a mixed-use district. Those prohibited uses are major agriculture, heavy industrial, waste-related services, truck depots, crematoriums, cemeteries, and storage facilities for Class 1 flammable liquids. That's it. An interpretation that level three only applies to these uses basically leaves everything else in the code up for grabs. I can assure you that the community members on the oversight committee would never have supported such an interpretation. If we had wanted level three review to be only for prohibited uses, we would have said so. We have been repeatedly asked why we didn't object to the variances for this project when it was before you. The answer is that we didn't know they were on your agenda, and we didn't check your agenda every month because we trusted the city to require proposals so misaligned with code to go through a level three review. We never expected them to come to you. A bit of history. 4 years ago, a project was proposed for a restaurant, a non-prohibited use, which had significant deviations from the code. The city discussed a level three review with a developer. All parties agreed that the proposal would get a level three review and the item was actually placed on the Planning Commission agenda. So at that point, city staff clearly shared our interpretation of level three review. After that proposal was placed on the Planning Commission agenda, the city first asked for a postponement because they were waiting for more detailed plans. The current plans could not be reviewed at the level of detail required in order for the administrator to provide a recommendation to planning commissioners. Shortly after this, in a voicemail to Janice Toker, then director of development Don Michelle Foster said that the proposal was being withdrawn from the Planning Commission agenda because the Law Department had determined that the Planning Commission could not pick and choose what to vote on because it had been reviewed by the Committee of the Whole. That's a reference to the Administrative Review Committee, the term used for city staff to review South Waterfront proposal. I don't know exactly what that means, but it sure sounds like the Law Department was saying no, South Waterfront proposals could go through the Planning Commission. There was no mention that the proposal was being removed from the agenda because only prohibited use is required by Planning Commission approval. Now here we are 4 years later and we're told that level three review is only for prohibited uses. We've asked for the date this interpretation was determined and a copy of documentation of such determination, but we have not yet received it. It seems that the city interpretation of the code on what requires a level three review is a bit of a moving target. Respectfully, we ask you to uphold our appeal and require the level three review to be used as intended and as how interpreted by the city for the first 12 years of its existence.
Thank you very much. Not for Bo.
We're not a party to this. They're a party to this. Bill? So our minutes were approved where this case was supposed to be separated from the appeal. The appeal. I'd like to ask the Law Department some questions about this, because this is I'm trying to understand what we're doing, what case we're hearing right now.
Sure, and I'm right with that step too. I was going to take the next step, but let's go ahead with that step now because I've got a couple of questions as well. But
I just wanted to ask the Law Department how is it that we are voting on an appeal of a case that's already been approved? We talked about this last month, so I don't want to have the same conversation again. I'm trying to understand why this particular development is before us. I can understand the administrative appeal side of it, but the fact that we still have developer and his attorney present to appeal to defend this appeal. Appeals really to the city, it's not, so it should be to the development.
So technically, I think you're on point here. It is an appeal of the zoning administrator's interpretation, but because the specific project is cited as causing the need for this appeal, I don't want to speak for Mr. Mullins, but I assume that's why he is here and why he wants to offer commentary. So it wouldn't be inappropriate for the board to ask questions of Mr. Mullins if he felt that was necessary, but I do think that you're spot on here, that this is more so as to the city in terms of the zoning administrator's interpretation.
Well, and just to be clear too, we said causing the need for something. That variance that was passed in May has cleared all of its timelines. It's now set in stone that this development on Bond Avenue requested has been approved by this board and has been set in stone, correct?
It's been a final decision of this board and it was not appealed within the appeal time for those variances.
Right.
And this appeal is as to the administrative decision made by city staff. It's right. Not an appeal on the issue of those variances, or else it would be untimely.
Right. And so as a matter of moving forward with that explanation, how is it that those two things are separate things? I think I need to understand that as a board. If I've made a variance request, I come to this board and I go through the process, and I think part of that is the zoning administrator's opinion or judgment that's made. How in the world can those things be divorced? The zoning administrator's opinion is about that variance request that's been submitted. And why doesn't it run with the same timeline as with the variances of the appeal timeline that's outlined very specifically in the code? Why don't those two things run together simultaneously?
I can only say that was one possibility that they would run together. And it was a legislative decision outside city staff's control. that the neighborhood appeal, the administrator's decision, not be given a timeline.
Can we see the, can we be given the wording of that? We haven't yet been given any writing about, I don't know what, what's that?
The legislative history of it is interesting in how we got here, but that's not really what's before you. It's just the appeal of the administrative decision of the zoning administrator to determine that this was a level two project and not a level three project. So this does implicate a lot of other issues, and they are issues that may need to be resolved in another forum. But what's before you is that determination.
And it only specifically applies to this parcel because the decision was being made about that.
This is the decision being appealed.
But how can I remake that decision? Like, it doesn't make sense to me that those are separated things. They are related. If I'm being asked to consider that opinion again, it was already considered as part of the variance request that was made and approved.
It doesn't have an appeal deadline. And that's all I can tell you, is it doesn't have an appeal deadline. The neighborhood could be bringing this appeal 5 years from now. They could be bringing it on day 15 after the variance appeal time is passed.
They could bring the appeal. Like, that's where I think it has to be separate, because I can understand appealing a process, but that appeal should not have an impact on a previously approved, it's already been a previously approved project. I mean, that's, if you were to think of another scenario, the other administrative decisions we had to, that there's been appeals, it wouldn't be retroactive, correct?
That is correct. And you're in it.
That's my issue I brought up last month. And I thought we decided last month, it's in the minutes. This particular project has to be taken off. There shouldn't be any mention of this project. I can understand it's part of the appeal in the context of the appeal, but in terms of appealing this project, I think that needs to be made abundantly clear. She's appealing this specific project in the decision related, but she's made very clear it ties to this specific project. My concern is, as a board, we're hearing two different things. We're hearing from the applicant one thing, their intent, and we're hearing from city staff that it's from this board itself that, hey, we're separating these two things. I'm just trying to get some clarity. I'm a little frustrated and confused as to why it's brought this way. It's gone through this process.
Understandably frustrated. I think that's a universal for everyone that's involved in this appeal. Because there is not a timeline for these administrative appeals. The appeal has to be made as to a decision that's made by the zoning administrator. It's this decision relating to this parcel of land and the proposed project that's being appealed. The project has been heard on the merits of the variances in May. Those variances have been granted, and the appeal time for those has passed. So this appeal goes to that gravamen moment when that decision was made. And that is the part that doesn't have a time limit. It's understandably frustrating. It's not the preference of how we'd like to have it written.
But I think the part of that is frustrating on our end is that if it goes back to approving it, or whatever the answer is on this appeal, it could potentially mean that the project should have never come here. And then does that have implications on decisions that were made about it?
You're trying to solve a question that is not immediately part of the thing you're being asked to vote on today. That may be an argument for another forum, but that's not. And I understand it's a concern. You're trying to be a responsible board, but that's not the matter that's before you today.
I want to move ahead of this hearing, since it's got to be about them apparently, and go here through the developer's perspective. Again.
Thank you. I've been on 550 West Main Street here for the development. We appreciate your commentary and your perspective on this. We should not be here. We should not be part of this. We have vested rights, both under the ordinance that says the time period for these variances, the appeal period is passed. We have specific vested rights under Article 15 of the zoning ordinance says once we receive South Waterfront approval, we have vested rights. The vested rights locally through the South Waterfront approval triggers state vested rights under Title 13. Our right to continue with this development as it is presented is set in stone. That cannot change. I would also say, in order to appeal an interpretation, there has to be some discretion exercised by the Administrative Review Committee. There wasn't. As Ms. Toker said, they followed the ordinance as it was written. The ordinance, they may not understand how it was written. They may have thought it meant something else. I understand Ms. Craig and her comments was involved, and she may have thought it meant something else. But as it is written, there is a very specific procedure. Every multifamily development goes through level two first. It has to. That is the procedure set forth. If you cannot meet the strict application of the zoning ordinance under level two, the ordinance says you have to apply for a variance. There is no discretion in this. You must apply for a variance. We come before a variance. There are very strict standards on getting a variance. You have to prove hardships that are site specific. We presented that evidence. We reached out to the neighborhood before we presented that evidence to make sure that they were aware of it. I don't know why Ms. Craig wasn't aware of it or other people weren't aware of it, but we went through the process. We reached out to the city of Knoxville and the neighborhood of the Office of Neighborhood Empowerment. We reached out to the condominium association next door. There were signs, there were notices. We did everything by the book. Again, no discretion here. We followed the rule of the law. The city followed the rule of the law. If we did not qualify for the variance, if we could not qualify for a hardship, we then had a permission. We may seek level three compliance, not just for uses, but it says if you don't meet the qualifications for a variance, use variances are not allowed at all. But if we didn't meet the requirements for a variance, we could say, okay, there's another procedure we have available to us. We could choose to go through that, or we could decide, okay, we're not going to do this. We walk away from the project. Again, there's no discretion exercised here. Everybody follow the procedure in front of them. If there's no discretion, there's no interpretation to even appeal. This should not even be before this body at all. But it is. We appreciate the rewrite that followed your direction to take us off of this, but we're going to be pulled into it anyway, which is why we're here. We also appreciate whatever decision this board makes today, if you would at least acknowledge in your order that we do have vested rights. That way, that would be part of the order. We know this is going to go to City Council. Let's go ahead and get it to City Council. Just make that part of the order, please, so they would at least understand that's what this board's determination is, so we can focus on those issues. I would ask that you deny this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else to speak first?
I'm sorry, Chairman. I do need to offer some insight onto that. And I do understand Mr. Mullins and the development team wanting to go ahead and get as much information in the final order as possible, but that is beyond the scope of what the board can do, is to determine whether someone has vested rights. That's a declaratory judgment beyond what you're being asked to vote on this neighborhood appeal of the administrator's decision.
Yeah, but so, also we're being asked to vote against ourselves.
Well, you've discussed your belief that they have vested rights in the record, and I think that will follow this matter on if it does go to another forum. But for you to make that finding might be beyond the scope of the appeal.
It's stated on the agenda.
It's stated on the agenda in the city staff comments, I think, on that page two.
But it stated as fact, right? That we have to consider that this is the part that no is a fact that we have to rely on to make our decision. So would that not be something that we just, it wouldn't be something that we believe. It's a statement of fact that that is the truth. So why couldn't we say that? We are not making that determination. That determination has already been made apparently and included in our notes is what I'm saying.
Okay, that so that determined, I'm going to defer to Christina as a, since she is more familiar with how the agenda is prepared and what the intent of the agenda materials are for you.
Yeah, these materials really are meant to give you all context and more information about each variance or appeal request that's before you. As much as we possibly can, we try to include helpful information, but sometimes legal statements like that do make it in there. That is an opinion of staff. It is not a, the statement of the law department necessarily, and it's not a conclusion that any, you know, court up until this point has opined on. Again, this is, these are just helpful details and factual statements to give you all context so you have more clarity on what's before you and what's being voted on.
I'd like to hear, I think it's Article 16, Section 1612, that talks about the zoning administrator's opinion. Could you read that to us so that we can hear that? I want to hear that. I haven't seen that. I've been told that yet. I don't know what that is exactly.
For Mr. Aarons, who's got it pulled up on the screen, or is getting there more quickly than I can.
I'm at 16.4 right now. So. So the procedure 16.12 part A 4A, applications to appeal a decision by the zoning administrator or director of plans review and building inspections must be filed with the zoning administrator. The zoning administrator will schedule the completed application for consideration by the Board of Zoning Appeals. The Board of Zoning Appeals will consider the appeal at a public hearing. The Board of Zoning Appeals must evaluate the application based on the evidence presented at the public hearing. Following the close of the public hearing, the Board of Zoning Appeals may affirm, modify, impose restrictions, or overrule the initial decision. So those procedures have taken place.
And it's just the lacking of a timeline. There's nothing that says.
It doesn't say within 15 days, within 30 days.
Right, but it also doesn't give a default. And what I'm trying to understand is the default between direction given, and I don't know how the law works in this regard, but when there's lacking direction, is that, why do we have to assume automatically that means that that opinion can be challenged at any time and forever?
And I'll defer to Christina McGrantz on that. She was involved in the legislative process and in some of the conversations that led us to where we're at.
So during the recode process, when the city redid the zoning code, we did actually, as staff, have in this section of the code a time limit on appeals of administrative decisions. We proposed that to council, and council as a group voted to remove that portion of the code. Part of the concerns noted were that, you know, there's not a publication about every building permit that goes out. We issue thousands, correct me if I'm wrong, of building permits every year. You know, there was a concern about, you know, the fact that there were just so many and the volume would just be too difficult for people to keep up with and be able to appeal on a timely basis. So for those reasons, council saw fit to remove the time period limit.
Okay.
Was the intent then to create an indefinite time, or was it just to leave it there to leave the board discretion? You know, is it, I know sometimes we omit things in the law, right? So that, not necessarily so they could be indefinite, but so that whatever the body is going to have their discretion to determine what's reasonable. Is that what's at play? Was that the intent?
No, unfortunately, that wasn't discussed in any kind of specificity in that they wanted it to be a 60-day or 90-day timeline. Instead, we certainly would have added that into the code, you know, if they had given us a specific amount of time longer than, I believe, what we proposed was probably a 15-day to match the variance appeals. But again, they did not have that conversation, so anything that I would say would really just be speculation on what council's intent was at that time.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I look at it, when something is omitted, I don't know if I read into that it means indefinite or that it means that. I think it just means it's omitted and it's up to the board to make a determination as to what's reasonable, or is discretion to determine how that should play out if it's not there. But I don't know what you guys feel about that, but I just feel uneasy about reading it that it was meant by omitting it, that it means an indefinite time period. I think that's unreasonable because of the reasons we talked about.
But it was omitted out of the conversation at City Council about it having the timeline?
That's correct. What we proposed, my memory is that we proposed, I think, a 15-day timeline, again, to match the variance appeal process as well. And during, yes,
yeah.
And during the council process, they opted to remove without replacing that particular language that staff proposed.
And that's not uncommon. Like, people do that. You know, if it's unreasonable time frame, you can't figure it out. I've seen it plenty of times. You just omit it and let the parties decide. Let the certain body decide what that looks like. So I don't know what that means for us today. I just think from my interpretation of what I just heard, I think it's up to us to determine whether or not it's reasonable to say it's indefinite. To the extent that it's not, what do we believe is reasonable in this regard?
Is that actually the question we're being asked to answer? That's where I'm a little bit, because to me, the black and white version is the approve or deny an appeal. The fuzzy version is the implications of, are we in approving or denying an appeal, creating an interpretation of something that, is it our purview to?
I think so. After, from a technicality standpoint, if the determination is, well, it's not, if we're looking at what's reasonable, for example, the variances, right? They have a timeline. You have a 15-day timeline to appeal those. You can come before the board and say, hey, I'm going to appeal this within the time frame. I mean, outside of the time frame permitted, the 15 days, and that means we either can't hear you or we vote against it, right? Same thing here. It's, we determine what this, the timeline is unreasonable from a technicality standpoint.
I think that's where I'm struggling. I have a concrete opinion on how I feel about this. So it's not that, it's the all the other.
I think it could be in addition to. It could be in addition to. I mean, because my thing is, I want to hear the mayor's opinion. We've heard it. We can talk about it because we still haven't got to. We've said a lot about what we're frustrated about and what we don't like about it, but we haven't talked about whether or not we actually agree with the interpretation. If our decision is still, yes, we still agree with what we did back then, then not only that, but we believe it's unreasonable to, you know, so it could be an addition too.
Yeah. And that's, I guess that's, you know, I don't know where everybody else stands if we're ready to discuss for the merit of the appeal. I mean, I understand
sure.
the frustration on the implication of it, but.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the.
To me, this comes down to, you know, I work in a lot of jurisdictions in a lot of different states, and there's never been a case where there's a cap on the degree of variance, the level of deviation. And I think that the staff's decision that this came to this board was correct. It was a variance. It was a change to something that was listed in there, and there's, you know, and if that's something that the community wants to change, I think that has to be changed in the ordinance itself to actually state that if it's above 200%, or you have to actually qualify that deviation, because otherwise from project to project, that's a qualitative decision and that's not fair. But I think the decision that was made that it came here was appropriate, and I would deny the appeal.
Based on the interpretation that it had, right?
Yeah.
I agree.
I agree. What I'm struggling with is just the procedural. Why is this for us in its form? We're quasi-judicial right board, so we're here to hear facts and make a decision based on facts and what's written. We did that. We did our job in May. Don't revolve the process. Variance was granted. Again, we've said this all over again. As somebody in the development world and those others at this table, you have to have a process, a fair process. There has to be some level of certainty with that process. There's a lot of risk that goes into putting a project together. Those delays cost money. Those, you know, there's a lot of money on the line. There's folks coming out of town to have that indefinite appeal. Jeopardizing a case is really concerning. It should be concerning to everybody. This has nothing to do with this specific development, just any development. That's what troubles me and why it's before us this way. That's what troubled me last month. I'm saying this needs to be just, we want to talk about just the administrative decision and discuss that. That's the closest we should ever get to making policy. We're not a policy making board. In my opinion, the proper approach, obviously the appeal was missed for whatever reason. They didn't appeal it in a timely manner. They want to fix things going forward. In my opinion, that's going through the legislative process, through city council, through the commission, getting those changes made to the ordinance to provide more clarity and more certainty. And that's totally fine. And maybe getting back to, I know we're going a lot of directions, but in terms of providing a timeline, I'd be okay. I know we've strayed into this from time to time as a board saying, we make a recommendation to city council, hey, there needs to be a time frame on this so we can prevent these issues, these circumstances happening going forward. All that to say, I still have trouble voting on this because I feel like it's turning this into a political process. We're taking a process, a legal process, and we're making it political because it will, no matter what we do, no matter what we decide,
well, I think
it goes to city council, and then it becomes political, and it becomes policy. It just becomes a.
But I think that's actually where it comes down to. We just have to make a decision. It's already political, with or without us, and so it is likely to go there anyway.
Yeah.
So I think we have to look at,
well, the
was
not,
it appropriate that we heard it?
That's...
Was it appropriate that it was sent to us? And that, you know, typically this board would raise that question. We would ask, is it appropriate that we're hearing this? If it wasn't, and I feel that that decision was correct. It came to us. We offered the variances. That, so I would deny this.
Sure.
And then what happens from here happens from here.
And I agree with that. But from my perspective, the method, it really does matter.
It does.
A lot, because we are being asked to vote against ourselves here. And
I disagree. You're being asked to overturn my decision. You guys made the decisions based on merit.
But the practical implication of that, based on how their variance request is presented, means that they are, and they're very, very clear, that they're going to go after overturning this developer's ability to proceed forward. And that, I don't know how to divorce the two, because it's been stated very clearly that's the case. You know, and you're nodding your head like it's not, but you said in all of your statements that's the intention. It's to undo the variances that were granted back in May. And that is to me, that's a structural concern for this board. I don't understand why as a board chair, I should be okay with that. Because we have said that those variances were granted, and it's important. And it's not just the developer. It's your neighbor. It's your community. If I am building a house and I'm 2 feet out on my setback, and I come to this board and I get a variance to request that, 3 doors down, somebody did not see the sign that was put in my yard, comes in and challenges Peter's opinion, challenges the zoning official's opinion, and all of a sudden I'm midstream building my deck or my garage as a private homeowner, then I have to stop midstream. I can't continue to do that. It matters across the board. It's anybody that has the right to stand here and ask for a variance that, you know, and so now there's this back door to be able to undo the decisions that this board has made.
That was the word. It's a mistake on the part of the on the part of council or whatever, that it's
correct.
That
and that's a process question.
But it's not, but I don't think it's up to us to correct.
I agree.
So
I completely agree. It's not up to us to hear it. It's not up to us to hear it and to decide, make this decision.
Well, I think that we have to hear it because it is following a process. It just it reveals a backdoor error, I think, a problem that I think we need to vote on. But I think we also need to present an urgent request to council that this be corrected so it can't happen in the future. I think it's kind of a fluke also that it was discovered.
Is this a fluke of this particular zone, South Council Waterfront? Or is it written this way in every piece of the zone code?
Or are you talking about the lack of the appeal?
Well, this is a form-based code, a form-based zone. I'm sorry.
Variance is of the same.
No, but the decision to so level two, level three,
yes,
is that specific to South?
That is just
so that's Cumberland, any of the other
so
ones.
It couldn't happen in one of the base districts, like RN5, for instance.
That's what I'm asking.
Right.
Okay.
But as a board who hears Cumberland Avenue all the time.
Same determination. So sorry, but for the record, we do need to make sure we're getting everybody's statements.
I agree.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Further discussion? Are you ready for a motion?
Yeah, I think. I think we've got all of our discussion.
I move to deny the appeal of 9G22VA.
Second. Motion in a second. On favor, aye.
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 I'm going to abstain. Motion carries.
That's true.
I just want to thank you all for your time. I know it's
difficult.
I know it was difficult. I could see it. Let's just and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Mine's not either. Something happened. Hit your on off button. Your power. I had to swipe.
There we go. Thank you. I'm sorry.
I got stuck out too. Good. All right. Okay.
All right. Moving right along to 10A, 22VA. That is 3934 Alma Drive, or Alma Avenue. Sorry.
Alma.
I apologize. You can give us your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Arlene Janus. I live at 3934 Amble Avenue, Washington, Tennessee, 37914.
All right. Thank you very much. Let me ask real quick for the process. Are there any further comments from staff on this item?
No
further comments. Thank you very much. Go ahead and tell us about your grant request, please, and what your hardship is.
Okay. Before my project, I did come to seek help on what can I do on my property. I was told I can put a 6-foot fence up, allowing 10 feet setback from the street without a permit. And that's what I did. And when I put my fence up, I got a violation.
Okay. So, but you did ask beforehand?
I went for a number of times. And the final thing I got was 6 feet, 10 feet from the setback from the street. And that's what I did.
All right. All right. I need to ask just, is there anyone here to speak in opposition to this request? Okay. Questions, comments from the board?
So what I'm reading is that actually this is asking for the increased height for what's in front of the home? Is that, am I reading that right?
Well, see, what I read, I'm just gonna read the details of this. It said 5 feet. They told me 6 feet. See, that's one thing that conflict with what's in here, what was told to me. So I'm thinking if I got a 6 foot fence, 10 feet from the setback, I'm good. Finding out I'm not.
From 5 feet behind the front of the building line toward the front lot line from 42 to 72.
So you can have a shorter fence going around the front yard because it's the taller fence. I think that's what's the.
You said, who told you this? Who told you it was 6 feet? I came up here to the building, planning people. I went to the codes. I did 311, trying to get them to solve what I'm trying to solve. I'm trying to solve all this stuff around my property for my neighbor. He's constantly got stuff operating as a business. You know, I can't walk out my porch and I see constant stuff laying against his property as if, you know, I'm supposed to take this. And people ask me all the time, this your stuff? No, that's his stuff. And I've called 311, I've called people to see can they make him clean up or whatever. And
did you get verbal approval of this, the 6 feet, or was that something written that they took?
That was verbal. Because I'm asking the staff people. I'm asking who I think should know what I can do. All I kept hearing, long as not over 6 feet on the side, and long as 10 feet setback from the street.
Okay. Is this correct? Can someone verify whether or not this is?
Ms. News, my name is Brian Berry. I think we've spoken on the phone multiple times, and I think you've received some emails from me. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I know at one point I provided you email outlining the information that was in the code with regards to where a fence could be located in the front and the size of it. Is that correct?
You sent me an email, and the problem that email I got from you, I keep telling you, I'm legally blind. I can't see normally what's going on. So when I get that attachment and I blow it up so I can see what's going on, I'm thinking, you said where my street, my name of where my house number was my house. Well, that's a little dark blockage in the front to what I can see. So when I stretched it, I didn't realize I was stretching off the street part of the diagram until a month ago. I was talking to one of my associates at the O'Connor Center, trying to explain how come I got this audience, how come, what I'm misinterpreting here. So when she came onto my email, and when I showed her attachment, and when I spread, I have to spread so I can see what's going on. When I did, she said, Arlene, that's your house, not the street. So when I brought it back down to normal, this when she showed me up it was a street. This when I seen that, fence already up. I'm going on 6 feet high, 10 feet back flat, drawback lady will call it. That's what I'm going on. And at the same time, I'm trying to have this jump around me when I walk out my house. You know, pictures I sent a gym constantly, every time I look around, it's always something that I got to deal with. Refrigerator in the driveway, door not out, potty, toilets, whatever. All that right there at my property.
That sounds very frustrating, I understand. But to go back, he did give you the email. It did state what we see here today. It's just that it was some, you just kind of, when you pinched out, you couldn't tell necessarily what it was.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. He sent me the email, the diagram, I couldn't read anything on it. So I had to stretch it so I could see what was going on. And I'm going on 6 feet, okay, 6 feet. You know, and that's the reason why I started my fence where it is now. I'm about 10 feet setback from the street. So that's what I'm going on. So there, and that's why I sent you an email. I said, I need some clarification. You know, and
is this the hardship that you said describe the hardship, and it says the custody of the junk and construction material. Is there any, is that the only hardship that you
that have? And plus constant on my property, because I mean it's a real complicated situation. And I feel like this is to solve everything. Just put a fence up, you know, won't be no chance of them leaping over to my property. Or something like I used to. I just get nails in, on my tires. Cause he operates property as a business, so they have nails, whatever. It's in my driveway. So now when I'm rolling back and forth, anything like that, I get tires, nail tires with them. So I'm just trying to solve. Why do I got to look at all this? A constant. Building material, toilet potties, or
see, I think that's the question. I don't know if we have the appropriate answer here. Like, I get that issue specifically, but that's that where I think it kind of exceeds the scope. Our job is to kind of look at the hardships that you have,
okay,
determine whether or not, you know,
right. And see, here it says 5 feet. Well, how come they told me 6 feet?
It says 6 feet. It's 6 feet high, but it's the 5 feet is 5 feet from the face of your building. So the 6 feet is the height and the 5 foot is actually where you have to go lower. They're two different.
See, this one,
I absolutely hear and empathize with the why, and I'm hopeful that there are other procedures from community standpoint to be able to deal with that among neighbors. And then it's a question of the fence. And I was trying to look at other neighboring properties there. I see some chain link across the way, but can't tell the height.
And I've gone through many since this board meeting. I've gone through several neighborhoods on the bus, whatever. They got the same problem I got. I mean, they got the same 6 foot fence, and as you get closer to the street, it's shorter.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like three different.
So what were you asking for today?
I'm asking to keep my fence.
Yeah. She's built in. She wants
it already there.
But normally what would happen is what you can see in that picture, and then 5 feet back from the face of the home, would have to drop to the lower height. So it would step down and you wouldn't have quite a high, especially because it's solid.
So then the question for me, like if she had to, before building the fence, if she had gone through this process, like maybe what if it was already like pre-existing or something like that, I don't know. It was already a...
See, if I put
down
my chain link, do a chain link, does not solve my problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not solve my problem. So I privacy fence, that's something I knew up chain link. I'm finding that now there's other types of fence. What solve my problem though? No, I've been trying to get the city or somebody to make them clean up so I wouldn't have this problem.
So do we have a hardship to be able to approve these variances? Do we have a hardship to approve these variances?
Tell me. I do have one question. What do you do with messy neighbors if they're like, I mean, looking at these photos, they are chronically messy.
And
this is a small version of it too.
And I can see a couple photos that I would want to live next to someone that
messy.
This
is a nuisance. I mean,
what can the city do about asking someone to clean up their property generally? And this may
can
be
we
not
get you
the department that we're in. But
can we
do
this? I
mean, answer your question. We have neighborhood codes officers patrol in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Citing people for overgrown lots,
right.
Dirty lots.
Right.
If it's, we always give people time to get cleaned up. So if this neighbor has recycling or reoccurring stuff, but it comes and goes, it's not like it's there
right
long term. I don't know the specifics of this project or this property.
Sure.
But I'm sure that, man, if you call 311 and make a complaint about your neighbor, we will drive by and see if there are
anybody. I've done that. I wish I could get a report. And then you see how many times I've called.
Okay.
That Allen guy, you know, he acts like, you know, this is a man's world. I shouldn't say nothing. But no, I'm going to say something because it's bringing down my property. Because mm-hmm. I want to sell my property. They're going to look at this. What's all this going on here? You know, got abandoned cars. Nobody, this neighborhood stuff.
So you have called code enforcement?
I've been up there. I went to the mayor. And, you know, I'm so frustrated. They walked me down here. And that's how I really got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to the mayor's office, mm-hmm. told my situation.
Mm-hmm.
They walked me down to codes. And I guess since there was a mayor representative there, they kind of pay attention to what I'm saying now.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
If this had a point before, you know, come to us, had the place and have been here, and someone was asking for this type of variance, you know, and considering the minimum adjustment necessary, all of those things, and whether or not it applies after any reasonable use of the like stuff like that, I think that she, I could see some type of flexibility there and some leeway there, and I can understand that. I guess for you all, I just don't understand, like, the hardship aspect of it, like what is what she describing, does it meet the...
So for context, this board has similar requests
uh-huh.
because the property was essentially on an island with streets all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no reasonable use of their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's in South Knoxville. I drive by it. That. And that's one where, yeah, there's no reasonable use of your backyard if you've got streets all the way around. It's a small neighborhood lot. And so that's where the hardship was. They don't have any place to put a privacy fence. And so that's why this board granted it, to the best of my understanding.
Reasonable use.
Yeah.
I've never not gotten a notice from the city about overgrown lot and not cleaned up my lot or cut my grass. So I don't know what happens after I don't do that.
If you don't do that, we
yeah.
will cut your grass and charge you a very large fee.
What if I had a bunch of stuff sitting on my lot and I didn't move it and it was continued to be messy?
We will send public service out there with a knuckle boom truck. We will remove it
and
charge
it's been going on for years.
Okay.
I've been trying to get stuff like this done with him just in the recent. Since 2019.
Sure.
Since I've been down sick, I can't move in and out like I want to. Used to, I just travel so much. I'm gone, dark,
sure.
I'm home and dark. So I need to look at all this stuff. But
sure.
Now since I'm down, can't go like I want to.
I understand.
What's going on?
Sure.
Like I said, 2019 and.
Absolutely.
I,
is there a motion for us to consider or?
I would like to have a motion to consider for this one. I would.
Yeah. Well, then make.
I'd like to make a motion to.
Make a motion to do what? Are you going to make a motion?
I'm going to make a motion to approve it.
Okay, to approve 10A22VA.
Yeah.
As it's submitted. Okay. You have a motion to approve 10A22VA submitted.
So what does that mean?
You have to.
We have to do a motion and then a second, and then we have time to further discuss, and then we have a call for a vote. So this is just a matter of process right now.
Okay.
So we have a motion to approve 10A22VA.
which is what you've requested as a submitted, which means it's what you've asked for. Okay. I have to have a second for that motion to make the next step. Okay, there's a motion and a second for further discussion.
Will you just provide your explanation for?
Yeah, I think that for me, what she's requesting is it was a minimum adjustment necessary. I don't think that it's not in harmony with the general, like, I don't think it's injurious to any neighbors. I don't think it's detrimental to public welfare. In fact, she's trying to do the opposite. She's trying to fix something that she's been dealing with for years. I don't know. We've talked about her dealing with this for a very long time and as it relates to the use of her land. So that's what I'm basing my motion off of.
Okay.
I'm certainly empathetic to the why, but when I look at the hardship and I think about the character of the neighborhood, if every lot had this type of barrier between it, that concerns me. So it's the why this one and would we approve it for the next 10 continuous lots? I struggle with that.
Presumably, if we did approve it, we would only approve it for the opposite side of this particular house. But I don't know
that. I think about hardships, or typically hardships are something that don't go away, right? The shape of the lot, the location, the topography. What happens when a new neighbor moves in, it gets cleaned up, the house, and and all the junk's gone. You still have this big, really big fence that's past the front of the building line again.
She might not be able to sell it.
If you're being able to sell at that point, then I think that could be detrimental to the property value. I empathize with the situation. But there are a lot of that's out of our jurisdiction, through a lot of ordinance, home occupation, and zoning violations. We can't solve those problems. But I don't disagree with the rationale. It's just that legal process standpoint, I don't see a hardship as it relates to a variance hardship. That's my opinion.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
I have a quick question too. Before, just
sure,
because I get it, but I just want to make sure too, from a precedent standpoint. We've never had, that was the only type of example. You can't think of any other situation where this type of hardship or similar situation was described, right? Like this is, just want to make sure. Okay.
No, I'm very familiar with this image. We have these conversations with property owners all the time. There are options.
Yeah.
Alternative options.
What are some of those alternatives? This could have done.
Sure. You see 42 inch sides.
Is that one of my pictures?
From the bottom.
No, ma'am. It's a photo of an artist rendering of different transparencies and different fence heights. Basically, you can have a 6 foot tall fence and it shows different board widths. Absolutely. Board widths between each particular fence board.
Yeah.
To demonstrate transparency is someone looking at a fence and being able to see through that fence, which is part of what the code deals with. It's not all about height and distance. It's also about transparency at different points.
So is there a way she can kind of, whatever your pre-existing fence, there's a way to modify it, right? There's a way to fix your pre, to go in, because I understand it's already up. Maybe there's a way to go. Yeah, but that's what this is, and I think maybe if you call it, maybe get some feedback on that too, whatever the termination is today, notwithstanding whatever happens between the board, but it may be a way to modify the fence in a way where you take certain parts out or whatever to make it fit within the code. But I just want to put that out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We have a motion and a second to approve 10A-23VA as is submitted. All in favor, aye. Opposed? Aye. One aye. Opposed?
Aye.
No. Aye. I'm no. Wait, let me say that. I said that wrong.
Nay.
Nay. Opponents. Okay, 1-4. That motion does not carry. I will make a motion to deny 10A22BA as it is submitted.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. And before we proceed to the vote, zoning doesn't take care of neighborhood enforcement stuff. And that's obviously a problem next door to you. And this entire board is sympathetic to that. We're sorry. If there's anything we can do to help her refer or re-refer to neighborhood and codes enforcement, and let's make sure that somebody gets on top of that guy.
The same thing about code enforcement I have now, to me, is worthless.
And I understand the pain on the, I understand your perspective on that. This board definitely does, and we're sympathetic to it. I promise. And that's why I'm taking a moment right now to ask our zoning official and one of our city attorneys sitting here too to help, because if you're not getting the service, the response that you need from the city, that's a disservice to you. But this is kind of the wrong forum to try to fix that problem.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just being transparent about that.
Okay.
And so wanting to help. So, you know, we're saying that to the record, and hopefully they'll do what they can to refer you to the right place. So,
okay, so y'all going to do that, right?
Well, we have to go first, but let's just do that real quick. We've got a motion and a second to deny 10A22BA. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? So 4-1. Motion to deny carries. But yes, so yes, ma'am, we are going to deny it.
So who do I need to go to either appeal, or do I need to? But see, that's the thing. I want to, well, that's a lot I want to do.
Sure.
I mean, this fence is about to come here. So y'all denied the first portion of my of the fence, right?
Yes.
You can appeal. You can appeal our decision.
Correct,
council.
Yes.
Okay. I want to appeal.
Yes, ma'am. You can do that, and they can help you with that.
Who's help?
Mr. Bear. I can do it.
Brian Bear.
Before you go, I really do think this is very difficult, and I will tell you that I applaud you for advocating for yourself, even though we've decided today this is not the correct form. Continue to advocate for yourself, and I hope that you find a resolution.
Know.
I know. Mm-hmm. That's that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Reach out to Brian.
Ma'am, that is within 15 days.
Okay.
So within
15
you
days.
Oh, yeah. Will you be here tomorrow?
I will. I'll be
here.
Thank you.
All right, next up, 10B22BA for 5858 Sun Lane. And you're here to speak to that. While you're on the way, I'll just go ahead and ask the room, is there any further comment from the city on this item?
No problem.
All right, thank you. All right, name and address for record, please, sir.
David Rosen, 591 Bridgeton Drive, Council, Tennessee.
Okay, David, thank you very much. Would you go ahead and tell us about your bonus request and what your hardship is?
So we are planning on to build a modest sized home on this property. The current zoning setback requirements is 56 feet from the front of Lucerne Lane. And the size of the property does not allow that. We originally requested 25 feet, I think on the application about 32 feet, but in order to be able to build this house.
I was going to ask him why the actual written application said 25 and our agenda says 32. Was that changed for a reason or just an error?
That was the minimum maximum rather than just say 25.
Isn't that what's drawn on here?
Yeah,
so 25.
I think it's related to maybe the porch. From the porch, it's 25. Yeah, so the porch is not considered a principal structure, so it's related to the principal building. And it shows 27 feet from property line to the porch. So it's from actually property line to the actual structure.
Got it.
Thank you.
put more. So, yeah.
Five plus five is 30. 6 plus 7. Because that's what's shown in the dashed line. So I see. Okay. Got it.
Do we have a greater variance? I'm sorry, I was not quite tracking my process.
So the actual home that's shown here, the 25 foot setback is shown, but the measurement to the porch is 27. It's a 5 foot porch. So staff is saying the porch can protrude past the setback. So the setback number in this is 32 feet, which is the actual house position.
Okay. And well, that's what was advertised was the larger setback.
Well, yeah, what was advertised was based on what was page two. Yeah, it's 32. It's 38.
Okay. So we are looking at 32. Okay, need to ask for his process samples. Are we going to oppose to this variance request? Seeing no one, and go forward with questions from the board.
This is oriented to Lucent Lane, right? Since it's not oriented to Jackson. Looking at the house next door, it's really close to the property line. Looks like some of the other houses along the street are much further back, so that's getting average.
You're also much deeper.
Yeah, and also the property line is pretty far off the right of way. So if you look at it from the right of way, it's actually set back pretty well off the road itself. The property line looks like it's back as far as I don't see an issue with this variance at all. And I think it's the definition of a hardship based on the shape of the lot. Property line. So I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
10-B-20-2-A.
Yeah. Motion in a second. All right, we have a motion in a second to approve 10-B-20-2-A as submitted. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No one's opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you. All right, 10-C-22-B-A, 2323 Glenwood Avenue. Let me see if I speak to that real quick. Name and address, please, sir.
Hello, Steve Abbott, 109 East Cliffshire Drive, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Thank you, sir. Real quick, are there any further comments from staff? No further comment. Please tell us about your variance request and your hardships.
We were combining these lots for a new single family home, and the issue came up with the lot frontage that it does not meet the current zoning. The 50-foot width, and so we need a reduction of that to be proven. I think it was actually 40-foot previously for the previous zoning, and then once that was amended, it changed.
So this was two 20-foot wide lots?
Yeah, close, yeah. It was a combination. This lot was actually part of, I think, 144, 164. There were two lots side by side, and there was two dwellings there, and then in 72, when the gentleman deceased, it was split off by deed.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Looking, are we there yet?
Let's ask really quickly for something. Did I ask already if there's anyone to post? I don't think I did. Anyone to post? Seeing none? No.
I'm in favor of approving this one. It looks in keeping with the lot size that's there. There's houses that you're not going to do anything to make wider. So
they're all 40 foot down the
road. Yeah. So I make a motion to approve for ready.
Second. We have a motion and a second to approve 10C22BA as submitted. Comment? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, sir. Okay. Next up is 10D22BA. Which is for 2113 Sunny Lane. Name and address for record, sir.
Javonte Taylor, 1829 Eric Clark Drive.
All right. Thanks, Javonte. Are there any further comments from the city on this one?
No addition.
Thank you very much. Javonte, please tell us about your variance request and what your hardship is.
My client has subdivided a lane and setbacks in the front and back. We need are 12 feet on the back and 21 feet on the front. I just want to put this house on here so it make it work.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is anyone here speaking in opposition to this request? None. I understand that you want to make it work for sure. Hardships are stuff like about the property that make it hard, like the size, shape, topography, soil conditions. Is there anything about this house that makes, about the property that makes it tough?
Or just the fence?
What do you mean? Can you elaborate the fence in the back? It's something wrong with, I mean.
No, it just is so close to the bank. They had it subdivided. It just make the house so close to the bank.
Whose fence is it?
Well, I don't know. I'm being this for a client.
There's nothing wrong with the land itself, or it's not unique, like something unique, or the shape, or anything like that. If it is that, okay. This is one of the issues that we discussed earlier, is that it has to have some type of hardship, right? Like, even in the previous, one of the previous cases, it's like a lot of stuff going on, like something, you know what I mean? It, obviously, that would be.
I said the client just wanted to build his house, they wanted to build it, so.
Okay.
So this is a corner lot?
Yes.
Okay. It was
a corner lot, and
so we split it in half.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it. There's a diagram somewhere in here where it shows a new lot line, and that as you go through, it's not clear because it's showing as one property. But that you're saying that's actually two part.
Yeah, so if you can look at the word map. The word map shows we are one. And if you scroll up to. That's the zoning map. There's also a standard map, which is the property assessor's path map.
So
and
which?
So it's still showing that it's who they have been actually split up by the property assessor. As well.
So what?
How is this
on? Legal
house
right.
Subdivided?
Yeah.
It is. That's what the word map is. It shows it's been registered with the.
That's the property right there.
Yeah,
they've split that lot into two.
Sure.
And now they're.
So this variance applies to which?
3R1.
Okay.
And that is a legal lot of record.
It is a legal lot of record.
So it was done legally when it was done.
Correct. Yeah.
So that exists. And therefore, is the existing condition not a created condition?
Well, but if it's done legally, I'm assuming it was done before some point recently.
It meets the minimum subdivision regulations.
Okay.
The zoning code tries to put appropriately sized houses in appropriate locations on those lots. This is one where there is a legal lot.
Yeah. I want to make a motion to approve 10D22VA as it's submitted because it is a legal lot of record and it's small. And so I'm not sure how you're going to do anything with it unless they get a variance one way or the other. And my perspective on it is that from the site plan is that this is it's a fine placement of the house relative to the rest of the neighborhood. I'm good with it. That's motion to approve 10D22VA.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further comment, question? All right, motion and a second to approve 10D22VA as submitted. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, sir. All right. 10D22VA. Philip Lopez. Yeah. Name and address for the record, please, sir.
Oh, address 4208 Garden Drive.
All right,
Thank you very much. Any further comment from the city on this one? No further comment. Tell us about your request, please, and your hardship.
I'd like to build a carport that's out in my driveway. And hardship is that, according to current setback requirement, the posts would be 5 foot from the property line, which would be directly in line with the narrow driveway as it is. So making it up to the top would become challenging to maneuver vehicles, semi truck, girlfriend's vehicle. And once we got there, one would not be able to leave without the other moving first. And just, I'll say, hardship in parking.
Okay. You ask from a process standpoint, there's anyone here opposed? No one's here opposed. All right, questions and comments from the board? Double parking like that, it's always frustrating.
The current garage is underneath the home, so currently you have to drive and then make a left turn on approach into underneath the home, which is a very small garage. I can't even fit my truck or even her car for that matter, so it's not used for any kind of vehicle storage.
What is the width of your driveway at that point?
At the top from the home to property line is actually 28 feet to that wall.
So not really wide enough to turn this thing 90 degrees and have room to get underneath it.
No. And even that picture, the retention wall doesn't help that matter either, since it funnels to the top and prevents, really, like I said, being able to maneuver both at the same time.
Well, the carport is 30 feet. That would be enough for 20 feet. Is that what you're asking?
I think if it could turn 90 degrees and perpendicular.
Do you understand what they're saying?
No, actually, sorry.
So the way you have it shown now, you're pulling up in straight approach into the carport.
Correct.
The question is, could that be turned 90 degrees and you approach and turn the same way you would turn into your garage? And that would allow you to have more of a setback from your neighbor's property.
I would not be able to know that my truck, there's no way I could come up and actually turn 90 degrees to park correctly or straight. You would have to be catch a corner.
Especially once you have posts.
No, I have my car.
So the hardship is you got a big truck.
Yeah. So. I might be forced to go electric and then I won't even have
How old's the house?
We was built in 48.
Did it used to have a bigger garage and it was closed in at some point, or is it always kind of have a smaller?
To my knowledge, that's the original.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Neighbors awareness.
Yeah, neighbors. I even asked if when I called the zoning to see if it'd be helpful if he had anything signed, he said it wouldn't be, but he's understanding he doesn't mind. And again, I'm not encroaching on anything, I'm staying on mine.
And you're pretty far off guard.
Oh yeah, it's a pretty, about 100 foot.
Yeah, it's a pretty big setback.
Mm-hmm. How wide is the lot overall? Maybe it's probably listed here somewhere, but I'm missing that. Do you know?
The lot overall.
The width of your lot? Yeah, it's, so it looks like it's 91 feet. That's where it is.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll make a motion to approve just based on the size of the house and how it's placed on the lot. It's hard to find a strict hardship on this one, but I don't see it as being damaging And I would say that the hardship is just how the house was originally built, where it was originally placed. You know, so that you're kind of pushed up against your lot line, and you're not going to move the foundation of your house. In other words, you know, it's
true. I think there is a topographic hardship because it's the retaining wall that prevents scooting the drive.
So I've got a motion. Is that a second? A motion and a second. Any further discussion? No further discussion. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion's approved. Thank you, sir. All right. I don't think there's any further business in front of us.
I want to ask real quick, sorry, would it be appropriate or asking our fellow board members to make a motion or pass a resolution, not binding obviously, or something to city council to close that loophole? Essentially, that's what it is. It's a loophole allowing for unlimited appeal.
Well,
cases.
City council doesn't necessarily like
read our minutes, right? Look, I know that they do. Some of them
never say. Some of them,
yeah.
I guess I'm wondering.
Yeah.
That's right, man.
I guess. Well. I guess we can pass a resolution to authorize our esteemed chairman of the board to write a letter that we all agree upon. I mean, in all seriousness, if the case. I feel strongly about this because, particularly if this case gets appealed to council and we approve or we deny earlier,
I think in this particular case, if it meets with the board's approval, what we'd like to do is talk about it among ourselves as staff, and maybe next month bring forward a recommendation from us.
That we can vote on?
Yes.
Okay.
As, a straw poll, basically, but just a signal to council as to what your support would be for a change. That would be better, because then it would be just that here's where
can we talk real quick about what's in that letter? Or whatever we call it, it's a letter?
In terms of like a resolution.
What are we doing to vote on? What's it called, a letter or a...
No, I think we'll probably just make it some kind of a...
resolution?
If you were calling for us to submit some proposal that you could vote on as a resolution on the agenda, we would be willing to poll staff, come up with some time frames.
Okay.
You could discuss those time frames and the merits of 30 to 90 days,
sure.
90, I don't know what those days would be.
Right.
And then you could vote on that as an agenda item that could be incorporated in your minutes and transmitted to city council.
And it would just be called under your other business section of your
report. Okay. Could we make a recommendation as a part of that any decision that council would consider be not retroactive for future judgments made?
We'll come up with some suggestions that address, the items before you all today.
There's a time limit that would solve that, right? Because it would have to be, it's an administrative appeal related to a specific case, and it has to be made prior or within the appeal time frame of that. Again, we're talking about this. They're
talking about the nuance that you're able to take. Oh, because the specific variance request in front of us is about that property, right? So that's what I'm talking about.
This would solve that if there was a time limit on administrative appeal related to a case, that would solve that, right?
I don't know. That's what I guess I'm asking, because my intention is for there to be a time limit, moving forward. But that they can't take this, our recommendation is that in relative to their specific variance,
there's no specific case
determination.
It's
only the applicable things in the future, not just set a limit, but that we're not talking about anything in the past because of the vested rights. And that's an opinion I feel like might be shared, but I'm asking, I guess, more than saying.
Are we officially adjourned? Or
I think we're not adjourned. I do not fully adjourn. And I'd like this discussion on direct talk about.
Let us talk as staff and we'll bring something forward. And of course, if there's something that you all want to add as a board that you might want to include, you can certainly take a vote on that in your
resolution and what you passed, but
yeah,
we can offer some suggestions that we feel would fully address the issue.
And I'm great with that. I'm pretty convinced nobody's happy with the circumstance. So, any further comment?
Thank you.
Hearing none, our meetings are adjourned. Thank you.